Sunday, March 10th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will present the composer, vocalist, and warrior queen, Renee Marie. Tune in to meet a woman you will be glad you met. That's Sunday, March 10th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
Song upon my lips. Sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
That's right, as that promo stated, Renee Marie is the guest of this evening. Stay tuned. Thank you, David Kinney. You'll be hearing him next week on Everything Old is New Again. We hope if you call 516-620-3620. Stay tuned for Sugar in My Bowl.
I want some steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. Standing here before you, song upon my lips, moving and twisting and turning, got that music in my hips. You didn't come and page in my name to be entertained, seeking some kind of inspiration from my pleasure and my pain. Music is my clothing. Slowly I undress. I don't mind disrobing to reveal my nakedness. I just want to take a words and harmony, add a little rhythm, and then happily conceive. Then I drink imported wine right out of the bottle. I look straight into the eyes of an eclipse. My love life reads like some dime store novel, and I wear me a black lace. Black lace, Freudian slip. Blah, blah, blah in my ear. took a whole lot of preparation, a lot of contract signing. But I paid my obligations and I freed my mind. I can see you staring from the corner of my eye. Are you thinking about what I'm wearing or some standard to misapply? Or maybe you're searching for some meaning in every song I sing. But all you need to know is this.
My name's Joyce Jones, and I am here with, what's your name, Miss?
Oh, Miss. You call me Miss. Renee Marie.
From Renee Marie. Thank you so much for allowing me to sit with you while you're here in New York.
Are you kidding? I'm glad we finally actually made this happen, Joyce. I really
am. Let's see. Let's start from the beginning.
Okay.
Where were you born?
I was born in Warrenton, Virginia. The fifth of seven children. Warrenton is a little town right outside of Washington, D.C. And when I was born, it was 1955, and the first 10 years of my life were spent living under Jim Crow laws, which obviously went a long way to influencing the way I look at the world and the way I perceive myself in it. You wouldn't think so out of 57 years that the first 10 would be so formative, but yeah.
Well, actually, based on one particular release, you know, it's sort of like we're jettisoning forward.
Okay.
To you're singing the national anthem in Colorado.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven. Ring with a harmony of liberty. Let our rejoicings rise high as the lilies.
is one. Yes, Lord, is one.
Do you want to tell us about that situation?
Well, see, what had happened was... No, for real. I was in Russia and being interviewed, much like I'm being interviewed right now. And the interviewer was a Russian woman, and she says, so, Renee, as American, how do you feel about such and such and such? And I almost corrected her, Joyce, and said, oh, no, you're mistaken. I'm not American. But I caught myself. And when I realized, oh, wow, I almost told her I wasn't American. Why did I say that? Why do I really feel that way? It seems so odd to be referred to as American. I don't know. It was disconcerting. Uh-huh. And so on the flight back home, I started thinking about those first 10 years of my life and how all those patriotic songs that we used to sing, you know, I loved them all. Although nobody in the black community really talked about it around kids. Uh-huh. Now, I'm sure the adults talked about it among themselves, but they didn't really talk to us about it. And so you just kind of absorbed all of the emotional stuff that your parents, neighbors, everybody, teachers at school were going through. This indignity of not being allowed to go in certain places. Yet, there you are pledging allegiance to the flag that's flying over a building you can't even go into. So it kind of messes with your mind, you know, mess with your mind.
Right.
And, but it's all swept under the rug so that when the Jim Crow laws were outvoted, or done away with, it was just nobody said, okay, now, this must have been traumatic for people of color, so let's talk about it so we can work through our feelings and, you know, come to terms with it, have some closure. So I had no closure. So when this woman said that to me, since there hadn't been any closure, I was wide open and everything just came pouring out. So I said, you know, what if I took these beautiful patriotic songs? I do love living in this country, and I love this country, but when I sing the songs, it don't feel like me. So why not take these songs and give them a melody and a feel that represents my background? You know, because the guy who wrote the Star Spangled Banner, or the national anthem, was a slave owner.
Right.
And I was like, I'm not feeling that. No, I'm just not feeling that. So that's where it all came from. And so I ended up writing a suite called the Voice of My Beautiful Country Suite, where it incorporates jazz and blues and gospel. And then on the last, or the third movement of it, I combine the Star Spangled Banner melody with the words of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Now, as I was writing it, I was thinking, well, should I do it the other way around? Sing the words of the Star Spangled Banner to the melody of Lift Every Voice and Sing. And you can do it. It can be done.
Sure.
But I just didn't like those words about the rocket's red glare and the bombs.
Uh-huh.
The message behind Lift Every Voice and Sing is much more in line with my worldview of peace and, you know, putting one foot in front of the other.
Uh-huh.
Onward and upward, as black folks always say to
right.
each other.
Right.
Onward and upward. So that's how it came about. And so in May of 2008, I was asked to sing at the Governor's Breakfast, which is an annual occurrence, and all the political bigwigs from all over the state come in. And they have music, entertainment, and it wasn't just me. There were other people singing and playing stuff. And so I went to that, and I was like, what am I going to sing? I asked them, well, what would you like for me to sing? Is there anything you want? So I decided, you know what, I'm going to sing that third movement, the one Star Spangled Banner, along with Lift Every Voice. I sang it. The governor comes up to me and he goes, wow, that was beautiful.
So the governor liked it.
Hello.
Oh, wow.
He did. And I still have the email. I have the email that he sent me.
Because the coverage actually was, it didn't even mention that the governor anything to do with it.
But wait, that was in May.
Uh-huh.
The thing that I did that got all the press coverage was in July. Yes, at the mayor's State of the City address.
Okay.
And at that one, they asked me to sing the national anthem. Well, when I was at the governor's breakfast in May, that was what I sang. And so when they contacted me, I thought, well, that's probably, they know that I do that, so I'll just do the same thing again.
Right.
But girl, I did not know that there was so much pomp and circumstance. I'd never been to the State of the City address. And there was the color guard, you know, like six different religions represented, and all six of them offered a prayer. And And then there was a Pledge of Allegiance, and then there was me. Mm-hmm. And when, after all this stuff was happening, I said, uh-oh, I don't know if this is going to go over very well. And just for a second, I said to myself, you know, Renee, nobody knows you're going to do this. You could just go ahead and do the regular national anthem. Mm-hmm. But I had promised myself, earlier in the year, that I was never going to sing the national anthem that way again,
right.
Ever.
Right.
Because it meant something to me to combine those two songs.
Sure.
The melody written by a slave owner and the lyrics written by the offspring of enslaved Africans.
Right.
I thought that was just a beautiful way to blend and send a message about our country. Just one way. It's not the only way.
Sure. But it's your way.
Yeah. But some people agreed with me and others did not. So what happened was this very conservative member of city council was fuming about it in his office. And there was a young black intern there. And he asked her, what was that song she was singing? And the girl said, it's called the Black National Anthem. Well, what he heard was Black National. And he took that term, Black Nationalist. Yes. He goes straight to the conservative talk radio station the same day.
Oh, no.
Same day. And gets on the station and starts telling them what a travesty it was and blah, 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 blah. So I started getting phone calls ringing like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And I'm thinking, what's going on? Why are they calling me about this? Next thing I know, all into that evening, TV channels and TV trucks come into our house to interview me about. And I still didn't realize it. Then the mayor calls. And he says, there's a huge uproar about what you did. Would you just apologize? And I was like, apologize? What did I do wrong?
Right.
Aren't both of those songs valid? Both written by Americans? Both talking about this country? What? So that was the beginning. But the upshot of it was I ended up getting about 1,800 emails because I told the mayor, he says, we don't have the manpower to answer the phones and answer all these emails we're getting about what you did. I said, give him my phone number and give him my email address and I will respond because it's not up to you.
Right.
And I said, although I'm not going to apologize for what I did, I do apologize for all the trouble it's causing your office because that was not my intent.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe it was because of what the city councilman did and how he stirred it up.
Sure.
And so the emails that I got were interesting. I got some unforgettable phone calls. I got death threats.
Yes.
I got fist pumps.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I got, it ran the gamut. Some were from white Americans who just said, can you just explain to me what you did? And we actually had a dialogue back and forth, you know, trading emails.
Now that's wonderful.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And I thought, wow, I'm actually communicating with a fellow citizen that lives somewhere in Albuquerque or Seattle. We've never met, but we're talking about what it means to be an American. It was very moving.
I bet.
Very moving.
Oh, it sounds very moving. And that is what we generally want anyway. We want to have this dialogue.
We say.
Yes, exactly.
But it's not easy to have the dialogue.
Right.
It's not easy.
Right.
That's the problem. I think we expect it's going to be easy, but then we hear certain phrases that push our button.
Mm-hmm.
And before we know it, we're getting heated. And that happened to me where I felt myself getting heated. But I just thought, Renee, you don't have no right to get heated now. If you're going to do something as an artist, you can't get upset at the impact it has on other people. You just cannot. You cannot.
Right.
You have to be willing to absorb it all. That's my view.
Well, I heard a soundbite of President Barack Obama's response to it. I mean, even he weighed in on it. And he doesn't weigh in on much of anything having to do with
That's because they ambushed him.
Okay.
So it was one day after I had done it, the very next day.
Mm.
Now, bear in mind, he came into Colorado and John McCain came into Denver a day after Obama. But they did not ask
John.
Oh, no.
Right. Why would they ask him?
He's white.
Right.
Why would he have to ask?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they ambushed him.
Okay.
Ambushed Obama. And
unfortunately, his response was, well, they asked you to sing the Star Spangled Banner.
Mm-hmm.
And you should have sung the song.
Yeah.
And you did. You did.
I sang
you
my version.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's okay. It's okay. You know. One time I got a phone call from this guy. He must have been in, it sounded like he's in his 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, lady,
I got your name and phone number in my phone, and I don't know why. This was about a year after it happened. And I thought to myself, I know exactly why. Because at the time it happened, he probably said, I'm going to call her. So he had put it in his phone, but he had forgotten.
Right.
So I reminded him. I said, well, did it have anything to do with the Star Spangled Banner? And I said, did you read about that flap in the newspaper or hear about it in the news? He said, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's why I want to talk to you. So we had a great conversation, Joyce. We really did.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that I had to remind him. Well, probably was. I could have said, well, I don't know. But I did know.
Right. You just continued the conversation.
Yeah, why not? And when I go to foreign countries, that's one of the first things they ask me about.
I'm not surprised.
It's about that.
Yeah.
They want to know what happened and why. Because their perception of people of color, they know about our history. I mean, people in Russia and China, they and other countries, they know all about what happened to black folks in this country.
Right.
Whereas I couldn't tell them anything about their history, very little.
Sure.
So to them, I think, you know, they're always curious, like, how does it work and what's it like? And
today, after all of those years.
All right. What?
Well, John Henry, he could hammer, he could whistle, and he could say. You know, he went to the mountain early in the morning. Just to hear his hammer ring, Lord, Lord, hear his hammer ring. Just to hear his hammer ring, Lord, Lord, just to hear his hammer ring. Death of me, Lord, hammer gonna be the death of me. Said, hammer gonna be the death of me, Lord, 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 gonna be the death of me. Well, John Henry's family needed money, said they didn't have but a dime. You wait till the rising sun goes down. I'm gonna get it from the man in the mine, Lord, Lord. Get it from the man in the mine. I'm gonna get it from the man in the mine, Lord. I'm gonna get it from the man in the mine. John Henry. I can hoist a jack, I can lay a track, and I can pick and shovel too, Lord. I can pick and shovel too, Lord, Lord. I can pick and shovel too. Well, the captain said to John Henry, I'm gonna whoop that steel on down, Lord. I'm gonna whoop that steel on down. Hey!
pain. I have to die with a hammer in my hand. Die with a hammer in my hand.
So let's go back to you.
Okay.
Another focus of you.
All right.
Your parents pretty much gave you preparation for singing and the writing in the style that you do, or coming up with that type of combination.
Probably.
Were they teachers?
Yeah, they both were teachers. My mom taught math and my father taught science. She taught at Turkey Run and he taught at Bull Run. There's
okay.
Two schools in Warrington. My mother taught like kindergarten through eighth grade in a one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
I remember that so well. And then they both got contracts to teach in the black elementary school in the town. So when your kids are teachers, you have to, there's a certain type of way you have to present yourself, you know. You got to represent.
Right.
And so whenever we were called upon to recite something or sing something, you had to know how to do something so that you could, you know, give evidence of why you were living on this earth. Instead of just taking up space.
Right.
What you doing here? You don't know how to do nothing? But I think maybe that was like a Southern black thing or was it just a black thing? What do you think?
I think it was a black thing, because
mm-hmm.
I certainly had the same thing.
You did? And where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up here in New York.
Oh, did you?
In South Carolina.
Okay.
I definitely have the experience of
mm-hmm.
having to be, you know, me and my siblings being pushed out. Okay, this is what they do.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And we sang. So.
Right. Yeah.
So your father was, I read somewhere that he had, as far as teaching, he wasn't allowed to teach in the school system, or
well,
what happened?
Well, he and my mom, along with several other prominent colored people,
mm-hmm.
decided to desegregate some of the restaurants and lunch counters there. And when they went in, somehow the owners of these restaurants knew about it, and so there was no ruckus at all.
Hmm.
They didn't serve them. They just sat there and they didn't get a chance to eat. But nobody tried to throw them out. They were just ignored. And this was all over the city. Because
wow.
It was all done in one night. You know, we all going to go out en masse.
I see.
So as a result of him being part of the leadership in that, for black teachers, they had to renew their teaching contract every year. So after that, he was blacklisted along with, you know, they always get the heads of the household. And so he was blacklisted along with several other black teachers and professionals. and lost his job. And he was already an alcoholic, abusive alcoholic, and so that just made it worse, you know what I mean? So, a courageous man, you know, no doubt dealing with, in his own way, with prejudice and racism and things we probably never knew anything about.
Singing. When did you start singing as an interest? When was
Oh, I don't know how long. I was just little.
Mm.
Always sang.
Uh-huh.
My earliest memory of singing is, it was seven of us plus my parents in a two-bedroom house. And the girls and the baby boy slept in one room, and the four other boys slept in the other room.
Mm.
And wasn't no door between the two rooms, so to entertain ourselves, we would sing at night. We'd play this game called choir.
Mm.
And somebody would hit a note, and then the next person would have to harmonize a note, and the next one have to find a note that nobody else was singing, and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And then my sister would say, okay. She'd say, okay, take it up a half step. And we raise it up, a half step, and then back down. And so I learned how to really listen to what was going on and hear harmony that way.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was fun. There's no self-consciousness about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always seemed to, when songs would come on the radio, it seemed to go like straight to my heart. Even though I was very little, I would just stand there and listen to the words as though I were that person and feeling those feelings. I don't know what that is, but I've always been that way.
Oh, you must. Okay.
Just Soldier Boy. Remember Soldier Boy? Oh, yeah. My little Soldier Boy.
That's a pretty sad song.
Yeah. I didn't know nobody in the army.
No.
I didn't know anything about I'll Be True to You.
Right.
I just remember being 5, 6 years old and crying at that. And then the going to the chapel and, all that. So spring is here. That would make me feel so happy, And I don't know. I just, every song, no matter what, even if it was an instrumental classical music.
European classical.
It would just evoke all these emotions in me.
Mm.
I didn't know what to do with them. They just flow over me. I seem to be overwhelmed by them and swept away.
Mm-hmm.
So when I would sing, naturally, this is where all of that emotion would come from.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me that I could sing it and imbue all of those emotions and not be faking it,
So how did, quote, jazz, unquote, enter your life?
Default.
Oh.
It was by default. Because I did like jazz, and I didn't know anything about it until I was about 17. I went to see Lady Sings the Blues.
Oh, okay.
Only because Diana Ross was in it.
Right.
And Billy Dee Williams, girl.
Right.
Come on. So I had never heard of Billie Holiday. And when I went to the movie, I was blown away.
Mm.
And I remember going straight from the theater to the music store and buying the songbook. Of all the songs, they'll make a songbook. Now you get the soundtrack, but back then, you could still get the soundtrack, but you also get the music book, can you?
Yeah.
And so I took it home and started playing because I played piano a little bit. And just listened to it a little bit. And I got married at 18 because we had a little R&B band when I was 15, 16, 17.
Oh.
And I met my future husband in it.
Oh, okay.
And he played the keyboard. But when we got married, we both became Jehovah's Witnesses. And that was the end of the music. No sing out in the world no more. This devil music.
Right.
About 20-some years went by, and I still played the piano, and I composed little tunes at home for my family and for friends, but I never did sing out in public until my oldest son was in college.
Now, this is Michael?
Yeah, Michael. You know Michael?
I read about him.
Yeah. And he just said, Mom, come to listen to this woman singing these jazz tunes at this restaurant. She's singing the same things you are, and you should be doing this, basically. I'm shortening it, but that was how it went.
I think he also thought you sounded better than
he
her.
He did. He did. But she wasn't terrible. She wasn't a terrible singer.
Mm-hmm.
She just wasn't. Michael's so used to me putting all that emotion. He's so used to doing that and singing that way himself, him and Desmond, both of my sons.
Okay.
They're so used. That's their perception of how you approach music. So this singer was bored with the songs. You could tell she didn't really want to be there.
Mm.
The people that were listening, that were there, were not listening. The musicians weren't paying attention. They were looking at the TV. It just so happened that we had a friend who had a quintet, and I called him and said, hey, would you mind if I sang with y'all's band? He says, sure. We can't pay you, but you want to sing? Come on.
Wow.
So that's where I started off at the Ramada Inn. A little old dark, smoky room. You couldn't see nothing in front of your face because it's so dark in there.
Now, this is also after you've ended your marriage.
No. I was still married. I had to ask my husband's permission.
Uh-huh.
Is it all right with you if I...
And he said, yes. Yes, you can. I will allow you. I'm just imitating.
He just said, sure, if you think you can make some money at it. So that's what I did. Then out of the clear blue, he just told me, I want you to stop singing. I'd been singing for about 6 to 9 months, something like that. And I had promised him, you know, like a good little wife should, if he ever thought that he wanted me to stop, I would, no questions asked. So since I had told him I would, I did. And about 3 months went by, and I was just desperate to sing again, because when I started singing with that quintet, I had forgotten how important music was to me. Being able to communicate with somebody else who's receiving what you're giving. It's one thing to do it at home, but it's another when you're standing and looking at a person in the eye and singing a song that you can tell is touching them.
Yeah.
That was just very precious to me. So I begged him to please let me start singing again. And he said, okay, as long as I follow this list of do's and don'ts.
And what was on the list?
Oh, one of them was, you can't have any musicians calling you at the house after 10 o'clock at night. And another one was, I don't want any of them putting their hands on you to help you on stage or touching you on the elbow. It was crazy.
Okay.
But, you know, I said, okay, I can do that. And then the other thing, you have to have dinner ready every night. If you have a gig that night, I want this house clean and dinner ready. And I said, okay, you got it. Yes, sir. Aye, aye, captain.
Right, because you want to sing.
I wanted to sing, girl. I was hitting them high spots, as my mama used to say. You know, you hit the high spots when you're cleaning. Because I was working full time.
Wow.
Yeah.
You had a full time job.
I was working.
And you had to do this to be able to sing.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I was still going to the meetings of Jehovah's Witnesses and going door to door.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow.
I tell you, girl. Wow.
You were hitting it.
I was hitting it.
Wow.
And so it got to the point where we were ready to do our first CD. And we had some savings in the bank. And I asked him if I could use some of it. I didn't want to deplete the account, but use some of it. And he said no. So, you know what I did? I asked my mama, lend me some money. And so my mama lent me some money, and we decided to go on to recording the CD. And the night before we were supposed to go into the studio to record, I was working on my music, and my husband came upstairs and told me again, this time more emphatically, to call everybody in the band, call the studio, cancel the recording, cancel all my gigs, no more singing, and this time it's final. And he said, if you go to the studio tomorrow, don't come back home. And if you want to keep living here, you will not go.
Now, by this time, your children had already...
They were
left.
In college.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was just me and him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what emboldened me, but I said back to him, well, there's a third option. I can go to the studio and come back here because my name is on the deed to this house just like yours is. And almost as soon as I said, I was like, ooh, you know, like, oh, what did I just say? Did I say that? But he says, well, you just try it. You try it. If you come back home, you're going to have hell to pay. I say, are you threatening me? He says, no, it's not a threat. It's a promise. I will never forget those words.
Wow.
It was a very defining moment for me, Joyce.
Sure.
Because if he had sweet-talked me and said, Renee, I miss you when you're gone. It's lonely here.
Right.
And, you know, do you have to do this thing? And let's spend some time. You know, the boys are gone. Now it's our time. If he had said that, girl, you know,
sure.
I would have said, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But he didn't.
Right.
He was a very good teacher for me in that sense, because he helped me decide what I wanted to do. Door A or door B. And so I chose door B for bye-bye. But before, I'm making light of it.
Sure.
But, you know, there was some violence before I left. And it wasn't as bad as I'd seen my mom go through, but it was still enough for me to, when he got through, for me to say, are you finished? And then walk out the door, and I did not ever go back.
Right.
It was good. It was good for me. And within a few months, I had moved to Richmond, Virginia, and quit my job at the bank, and, you know, we did the CD, et cetera, et cetera.
When you're feeling like a cooing dove, it ain't nothing but love. I know you're scared, I know you're shy, don't know what to say, can't hardly hold his hand or look him in the eye. Ain't no need to fear, no need to run away. Just make sure that you listen to me, hear what I say. It's nothing but love, nothing but love. Baby, don't you run away, no, don't you hide from these things making you feel deep down inside. 'Cause if there were just one thing you could have the rest of your life through, that one thing that I would wish for. Nothing but love, nothing but love. When you're feeling like a cooing dove, ain't nothing but love. Hear me when I say. It ain't nothing but love, nothing but love, baby, it's nothing but love.
That situation with your husband in the one-woman play you had, Slut Energy Theory?
Well, I don't actually revisit that, but I draw on my experience of growing up in a violent household. I do.
Okay.
And I draw on what it feels like to live under the thumb of somebody who has no respect for you, who sees you as a minion that's to be ordered around and have ultimatums issued to them. You know, to tell somebody, you either do this or you're going to get out. What kind of marriage is that? If he had said that, fix my dinner or you get out of here, I mean, it wasn't the singing. I don't think I want to sleep in a bed with anybody or even live in a house with somebody who thinks they can just order me around or tell me to get out. That's not cool.
Right.
And we brought the elders in and the congregation, you know. And I was like, would you talk to your wife that way, brother?
Mm-hmm.
And their solution was for us to pray together. And I said,
you know, it doesn't matter what faith it is.
I don't think so.
All tend to tell you this sort of thing if they believe that the husband is right by behaving this way.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder what those elders, how they were treating their wives. Kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah.
So I do use some of my life experiences to inform the play Slut Energy Theory, because the play is about domestic violence as well as sexual abuse, which was not my experience, but I know people who've gone through it. So it seemed to be very easy to write about, and it's very easy to play Miss Eugene Morgan.
This is Eugene Morgan. She talked like this. Now, I've got some stories to tell you, and you best listen.
That's how she talks.
Okay. Are you still doing that play?
I haven't done it in a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it something that you basically do in Colorado? Or?
No, I've done it in Tampa. I did it in Texas and Colorado, but I would love to bring it to the East Coast.
Hello.
I would, but I keep saying I need some venues, because I could do it on the cheap. I really could.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it needs to get a foothold, and then I do think it might draw some attention from bigger places.
Now, did I see that there were some songs released from that?
I did a whole soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Because there's singing in the play.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote the music, and I wrote the, I think it's called the book,
and then
acted in it. So it's definitely a one-woman show.
Yes. Completely.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the character, Eugene, this is what I love about it, is that I made her so that, as she said, she's already crossed it over.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in heaven, and she doesn't like it one bit, because it is nothing like what she thought it was going to be.
Mm.
And God is nothing like what she thought God was going to be. And she is upset. So she comes out on the stage with nothing to lose. Eugene has been through so much that she will say anything, because she's like, I've already had the worst done to me. What is God going to do? I've already died. You know, I've already been raped. I've already did. I'm going to say what I want.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about her. Mm-hmm. She has nothing to lose and speaks her mind completely. And some of the things she says are quite scandalous.
Well, it's definitely something I'd love to see. I hope it does make its way east.
Thank you. I would love to do that. Mm-hmm.
Garbage can. So if you see my crazy aunt on the street somewhere, put a little something in her hand. But this is not a protest song. It isn't about right or wrong. But to each other we all belong. And when we give, it makes us strong. But it ain't a protest song. Woman there with her two kids. Her husband beat her so many times. She tried to leave and finally she did. Through her counselor she's learning not to get involved with another abusive man. Down to your shelter and put just a little something in her hand. Now I'm not pointing fingers, placing blame, or trying to justify, but I swear that there, but for a couple of twists of fate, go away. This is not a protest song. It isn't about right or wrong. But to each other we all belong. And when we give, it makes us strong. But no, it ain't a protest song.
Also, because this production also sounds like another form of protest, in line of another form of protest, you did a song, This Is Not a Protest Song.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, the song is about homelessness, and it's about my brother, my aunt, and my mom. Because when my mom left my dad, we were homeless for about 3 months, although they didn't call it that back then.
Right.
But we had nowhere to stay. We just kind of went from pillar to post with our relatives, you know, until my mom finally got a job and saved up enough money to get an apartment. But it's called This Is Not a Protest Song because my experience was that you don't hear singers singing about social issues anymore. I'm talking about jazz singers.
Right. Right.
I mean, you hear them in country and western,
sure.
Rock
folk.
Music, folk,
sure.
Punk, almost everywhere.
Right. There's Sweet Honey in the Rock. There's, you know, Pete Seeger and Toshi Regan.
Right.
And, you know, folks like that.
But where are the jazz singers,
right,
doing? What happened? And so, you know, I kind of asked around, like, well, you know, would it be okay? if I did a protest song, you know, like against homelessness, and some people were like, well, I don't know.
Mm.
You know, you might alienate some of your fans. And I was like, well, so what? What do you mean by that? That just because somebody might be alienated, I should shy away from a certain topic? I said, I don't think so. That's not what jazz musicians used to do.
Right.
Oscar Brown Jr.?
Exactly.
Nina Simone?
Exactly. Abby Lincoln?
Right.
Max Roach?
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it was tongue-in-cheek, entitled, "This is not a protest song, okay? Mm. We're going to sing it, but it's not a protest song."
Mm-hmm.
So,
because we don't want to alienate.
Right. We don't want nobody to be alienated.
Right.
But the thing about it, homelessness, it's so prevalent that almost everybody you talk to either knows somebody who is homeless or they know somebody who knows someone who's homeless. I mean,
somebody who's on the verge of becoming homeless.
Yeah. Or maybe they've even been homeless themselves.
Right.
And there's all different ways to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And so I struggled with, what should I do when I see a homeless person? Should I give them some money or walk past them? Or I just didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't give them anything because I'd say, oh, they're probably going to spend it on liquor or drugs and judging them.
Mm-hmm.
Until my brother became homeless. Mm-hmm. And then, Joyce, my perspective about homeless people, you know,
right,
it totally changed because I knew my brother.
Right.
And I knew, yes, he's an alcoholic, but he's not harmful. He's not dirty. He was working full time, but he was drinking up all his money. And so I just thought, you know, if that was my brother right there, I'd want somebody to give him something.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the song came from.
And you also wrote a song for the Genesis 6.
I did. Yeah. Called Three Nooses Hanging.
Mm.
Ooh.
Are all these songs available on your website, by the way?
Well, Three Nooses Hanging is.
Okay.
Protest song is no longer. I did have it as a single.
Mm-hmm.
And I was donating 100% of the sales of that single to the National Coalition for the Homeless. But we just sold the last of them maybe 2 months ago.
Hmm.
I need to get some more.
Yeah.
Printed.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Or at least make it available as a download.
We're going to do that.
Okay. But we were talking about the Gina 6 song. The Three Nooses.
I was really moved by that. I really didn't want to take sides because I realized, just like what happened to me, sometimes things can be slanted in the news.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime you go to school and there's nooses hanging from a tree that you sat under the day before when you were the first black person to sit under the tree,
not a good sign.
There's no way. You can only draw one conclusion.
Right.
So I thought it was telling that the older white folks there just saw it as a harmless prank.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow. That's a harmless prank.
Mm-hmm.
What does a person have to do for something that they do to be taken seriously?
Mm-hmm.
I had to get it out, Joyce. I had to get it out.
Become a BAI buddy and help reduce our on-air fundraising days.
For just 33 cents a day,
$10 a month,
or more if you can afford it, you can become a BAI buddy and help your non-commercial radio station stay on the air.
BAI buddies get discounts at local shops, museums, and live events.
Become voting members of station board elections.
And receive our new WBAI tote bag.
To become a BAI buddy, go to our website, WBAI.org, and click on the link. I'm Dequi Keone Siddiqui.
And I'm Sally O'Brien. Become a BAI buddy today and keep listening to Where We Live, 8 p.m. Thursday over listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for caring.
Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
So, Miss Renee Marie, tell me, how is it that you're writing? Now, you said you play piano. Did that help in your ability to compose, or you just went for it?
It started off with me just playing it because I didn't really know how to write it down.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started singing with the jazz band, I asked the musicians all the time, and I highly recommend this to anybody when they're first learning, ask them for help. It's stupid to pretend you know something that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can tell you don't really know. First of all, you're not fooling anybody. And it just makes them more unwilling to help you. Why should they help you if you're going to front like you already know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're thinking it's forget you. So I didn't do that. I just like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. If I was to give this to you, is this readable? They would help me out. And I think people are willing to do that. So gradually, I figured out my own way to transpose music into a different key. I figured out how to write different rhythms. Like if I had a rhythm, I would think, now what song do I know that has that in the rhythm? I would look at the sheet music and see how it's written and say, oh, that's how you write it.
Okay.
Because I haven't really learned it to memorize it. I still have to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or I, right now, just simply call my drummer and say, how do I write this? He says, dotted quarter note, eighth. You know, he tells me, put it like that.
Right. Cool. Mm-hmm. So the other musicians, do you generally have them help you create the charts for them? Or?
No.
Okay.
No. When we're working on a new song, I have the charts ready for them.
Okay.
Even if it's just a bare bones and then we fill it in.
Right.
We've done it that way. Like when The Voice of My Beautiful Country, mm-hmm. when I took it to them, it was just, I want to do this song this way, and I want to do this song this way, and this song this way, but I don't know, should this one come first, or this one later, and how do I tie them together, and what should we do? And I wanted to, so all that was up in the air, and bless them. This is why I love my musicians. I love them. We're like a family.
Mm-hmm.
They worked with me, and they could say, well, do you want like this or like this?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go, I don't know. Let's play it that way. And then if I don't like it, let's try something else. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They trusted my creative vision, and I trusted theirs. And yeah, it's good.
So the people who were on Voice of My Beautiful Country, they're the same folks who were on...
Except for the bass player.
Okay.
He's playing with Marcus.
Marcus, the pianist.
Yes. Sorry, Marcus, if you're listening to this.
Marcus Roberts.
Roberts.
Yes.
Roberts. Thank you. And so our bass player now is Elias Bailey.
Okay.
He also plays with Freddie Cole.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Who else is in the band?
Quentin Baxter is my drummer. We've been playing together, maybe 12 years now.
Mm.
10 or 12
wow.
years.
And he looks like a teenager.
He does. That's because he's a mess, girl. He is a mess.
But he has beautiful locks. Does he still have them?
He does. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. He does. He does. One time we were in, where were we? Somewhere in Ohio. And we were walking downtown, me and Quentin and Elias.
Mm-hmm.
And this old lady was sitting in the doorway, sitting on the stoop. And we walked past and she says, she said, bring them locks in here, boy. Yeah. Bring them locks in here, boy. So that's serious, right?
It is serious. Who else is in
there? Oh, I'm sorry. I got distracted by the locks. Let's see. Kevin Bales is on piano. He's from Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
He is awesome. He is a monster
yeah.
on the piano.
These were the same folks you had at the Charlie Parker Jazz mm-hmm. Festival, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Last year. Amazing.
I love that. I love that gig.
That was so much fun.
That was our first time playing at Charlie Parker Jazz Festival, playing
yes.
in Harlem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That was so wonderful.
I love that audience.
Yeah.
Remember those dancers?
Yes.
Girl.
They're like the dancers.
They
are everywhere. When there's an outdoor performance,
mm-hmm.
they come out and they show everybody how it's done.
I'm telling you, that was the highlight of my year last year.
Wow.
Because when people dance, first of all, that to your music, that says a lot.
That's true.
But the way, I don't know, they just seem to be having such a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And their age had something to do with it, too, you
yes.
know?
Yes.
It was just, I love watching that video. I could watch it over and over again.
So there's a video, huh, somewhere?
Yeah, it's on...
on YouTube?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
If you,
I mean, I was just there, so... But I will go
Oh, but
YouTube.
The camera is right on them.
Okay.
You know, the guy, there was somebody in the audience
uh-huh.
who first had the camera on us, and then he saw me pointing to the... I was
right.
talking to the musicians, like,
right,
look at
right,
them.
Right.
And so he turns his camera, because he wasn't... See, he couldn't see them.
Oh, okay.
And so he finally does a close-up of them, and you can see her facial expression, and,
yes.
you know, the way they're interacting with each other.
Right.
If you search on YouTube for Renee Marie, Charlie Parker Jazz Festival.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will do.
Mm-hmm.
Hear that, everybody? Check YouTube and you'll find it. Nice. Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And in your falling you cry and feel so small. Yeah, but then you stand. And in your standing you dance. And in your dancing you give yourself one more chance. So close your eyes and let the wind from a thousand skies carry you away and set you down on foreign ground so you can run. Let it be better than they don't they. Shut up, up, up.
Listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. You need to call 516-620-3602. On behalf of the WBAI Transmitter Fund, I try not to interrupt too much of this program so you can enjoy some music and a wonderful guest, Renee Marie. I had a great time with her. She's so generous with her time, and she's just this generosity of spirit, and hate to even talk over, but let me say this: you do need to go to give the number 2 WBAI.org. If you don't, we will not have a station. There will not be a WBAI. Fortunately, we are at City College and WHCR. We're sharing space with them. Thank you, City College. But we won't have a transmitter. We have a space. If we don't have a transmitter, we won't have air. See, that's how that works. And we need you to either call 516-620-3602, or you need to go to give, G-I-V-E, the number 2, WBAI.org. And let me say this very quickly. My partner Hank passed on these announcements that... pretty important. It says, there's a woman of color in the arts presentation tomorrow at the Apollo. It's a PR seminar at 4:30, the talk, and at 6:30 it's free. Actually, if you go to apollotheater.org, you can find out more about that. Also, Ron Scott's Jazz Notes.
Oh!
In this week's Amsterdam News is dedicated to women in jazz, with quotes by Sheila Anderson from WBAI and Professor Sherry Tucker, and the lists upcoming shows for international for March.
So I looked at your itinerary.
You tired?
I looked at your itinerary. Well, the sad part is that we missed your being in New York. You were at Dizzy's.
Yeah. I was at Dizzy's.
In
that
February.
Was in February.
Yeah. This being March.
Was it four nights, I think it was?
Yeah.
We coming back?
Okay.
We'll be back.
Well, in looking at the schedule, it seemed like you were going everywhere else but here.
Yeah, but we coming back.
Okay.
We have some things that we're just in negotiations with. We
okay.
just don't, we never put it on the
That's
website
okay.
until
okay.
it's a done deal.
Okay. So, can we talk about why you're in town?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
What you doing in town? Why are you in town?
I am ready to do another CD.
Mm.
This time, it's a tribute to the music of Eartha Kitt.
Oh, wow.
Yes, Lord.
Gosh.
Eartha Kitt now.
Eartha you are Kitt. Going to have fun with that.
Oh! I'm already having fun. I've been singing at home like I've got to get my look ready, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody can sing like Eartha.
Yeah.
Let's just be real.
Yeah.
But, boy, she knew how to have fun with a song.
Yeah.
And she was sexy.
Mm.
She was.
She
you
was
should look
very
at some
much.
Videos
yes,
of this child.
Of course. She was when she wasn't even trying. In St. Louis Blues,
oh, no.
She wasn't trying. And she was.
She was just being Eartha.
Exactly.
That bad Eartha, as they used to. She has an album called That Bad Eartha. And she was a mess.
Yeah.
So I'm so thrilled. I mean, I've always thought, people who do tribute albums, why do they do that? Then I thought, you know, Eartha Kitt, she was in a category all by herself.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't even trying to do jazz. She would do show tunes.
That's right.
Anything she wanted.
That's right.
But she knew how to Eartharize it.
That's right.
Now, not that I'm going to do that, because mm-hmm. I'm not trying to sound like Eartha on the CD. I just
sure.
want to revisit some of the music that she did and have fun with it.
Like, what are you going to revisit?
Man, there's this tune called Old John. And when I saw the lyrics to it, I said, I remember this being passed around in school when I was a little girl. So it starts off with, Oh, John, please don't kiss me.
Mm.
Oh, John, please don't kiss. Oh, John, please don't. Oh, John, please. Oh, John.
Oh, sweat.
Oh. Now, it sounds
wow.
so simple, but the way she sings it.
You said it was passed around in school?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, junior high, you know
oh, okay.
how I was, you
yeah,
know how I was
yeah,
back
yeah.
in that. But the way she sings, it gives
wow.
me chills.
Yeah.
I think, how did she take this simple little song?
Mm.
Well, the orchestration is great. She always had great orchestration, big bands and orchestras behind her. And that woman could present a show like nothing I've and nobody I've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, she was really a social activist. I mean, she was outspoken. Because when I decided to do her music, I want to read up more about her.
Sure.
And found out she was involved in a lot of stuff. She went to dinner at the White House when President Johnson and Lady Bird were there.
Mm-hmm.
And she took Lady Bird to task about some issue. I can't remember. Some issue involving children.
Mm-hmm.
She just took her to task. Now, Mrs. Johnson, you know. I can't remember exactly what she said, but spoke out, child.
Wow.
I'm just trying to imitate
okay.
her voice. Only thing I can imitate of Eartha's is this.
Catwoman. Actually, that was my introduction to her.
Me too.
Being Catwoman.
Me too.
Yeah.
What did you... Now, when you saw that as a little girl, right? What was you... What did you look at your face?
if people could see my face.
Okay, here's her face, y'all. She's going... What is that?
Exactly.
And who is that? A black woman?
Exactly.
Is she being? I didn't know you could do that.
Exactly. That's exactly. That's what it was. I didn't know you could do that.
Can we do that?
Right. I mean, she was sizzling.
She was.
But Batman, I mean, Batman looked so nervous.
And can you imagine what the outtakes were like?
Right.
Oh my God.
And that, and seeing that was also during the time that there was Nancy Wilson on
right.
TV. You know, she was
right.
doing variety shows.
Mm-hmm.
And there was...
Diane Carroll?
Diane Carroll, yeah. There was still
yeah.
Julia.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. That's
yeah.
right, Julia.
And there, you know, there were faces, but there was,
yeah.
what, there was even, what, Leslie Uggams.
Yes.
I think. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it was, we were seeing, but not like Eartha Kitt.
Nobody was doing
no
that.
No one was doing that.
Out.
No.
She wasn't just being... It was almost like you didn't see the color.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost.
Because this other stuff she was doing was bigger than that.
Well, I also wondered how she wound up on Batman. It's like, how? How? How did that happen? You know, there was also, Nichelle Nichols
yeah,
on Star Trek.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, I accepted her straight out, you know, because it was Star Trek.
But all those women were well-behaved.
Exactly.
Whereas
she was
Eartha
bad.
Was up to no good.
She was,
you
what was
like,
the song?
Ooh.
She was like evil. She
yeah.
wanted to be evil.
I
want to
be evil. That's going to be on the CD.
Absolutely.
I want to be bad.
Right.
I want to be wicked. Oh, yeah. I love that song. And then there's
excellent.
Another one she did called I'd Rather Be Burned as a Witch
mm.
than Never to Burn at All.
Wow.
Yeah. Woo! So I'm really excited about this. You know, it's just kind of weird because it's outside of what I usually do. I always thought a tribute album was an easy route to take, but I am so pumped about this. I'm looking forward to having these horns. We have Wycliffe Gordon and Adrian Cunningham on. Adrian plays saxophone, clarinet, and flute. Wycliffe plays trombone. Wycliffe plays trombone. He plays trumpet. He plays the piano. Did you know he does all this stuff?
No.
And he sings jazz.
Wow.
Mm. And then Etienne Charles.
Yes. Trumpet.
And so he's arranging several of the horn arrangements.
Nice.
Yeah. It's different. You know, usually I do it all. I bring it to the guys and I say, this is what we're going to do. But this is like, ooh, I don't know what's going to happen. So
so how did you wind up inviting Etienne Charles to?
I love Etienne. I love the way he plays. He's a good friend of Quentin. I met him through Quentin.
Okay.
And I just love his personality. And he is an amazing musician.
That he is. That he is. I've seen him play percussion. I've seen him with a djembe.
What?
Yes. Surprised me. He was with Ben Williams, the bassist. Grammy-winning Ben Williams. He was playing percussion.
I did not know. Really?
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh.
Make him a dancer.
Yeah, and he's an excellent percussion because I play percussion.
You have a djembe, too?
I have a djembe,
I have one. You have two at home.
Oh, okay.
But I don't play it the way it's supposed to be played.
Well,
I have my own way to play it. I can keep time, and I got my own rhythms, but that's not right. It's wrong. The way I'm doing it is wrong, but I like it.
You have fun.
Did you take lessons?
I did.
Okay.
I took a few.
So there's a right way
learning
to do it.
There is a way that
I can't play like that.
However, there are people who play drums in the way that works for them, and they get what they want out of it.
Right. Yeah.
That's it.
Now. That's right.
Okay. Now, I wanted to ask you about, because I've noticed that some vocalists tend to do this at some point in their career, vocalizing. And I noticed that you had done it with Imani Wins.
Oh, yeah. That was their idea.
Okay.
That's a beautiful song.
Six two zero three six 02. WBAI Transmitter Fund, give the number to WBAI.org.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty.
But you did do Bolero. Which one
I did. That's where I combined Bolero and Suzanne. That's on Live at Jazz Standard.
Yes.
I combined my dad's two favorite tunes. Mm. Because when he died, we weren't speaking to each other. Well, let me be honest. I wasn't speaking to him. Mm-hmm. But I had this plan. I was going to not speak to him for a while, and then I was going to, you know, welcome him back into my good graces and forgive him. But he died before I was expected him to. Mm-hmm. And, wow. And I don't have many regrets in my life, but that is a huge regret of mine, that I withheld my love from my father that way. Mm-hmm. We had a difficult relationship because of his drinking and violence.
Sure.
But when he wasn't drinking, he was an awesome person. He was awesome. So I just needed to make peace with all of that. And one day I was singing, doing a sound check, and I started singing Ravel's Bolero because my father used to play it all the time when he was at home. Mm-hmm. I just started singing it for sound check, and my pianist at the time says, "Hey, you should sing that on one of the gigs." And I was like, "How are you going to sing Ravel's Bolero on the jazz? That's not going to work." Mm. But I started thinking about it. And I said, well, my dad's other favorite song was Roberta Flack's version of Suzanne. Maybe I could combine those. Another instance of me combining songs together.
Exactly.
And, wow, I was really happy with the way it turned out. It was like mashed potatoes and wasabi.
Oh, you know? That sounds good, actually.
You never heard of that?
No.
You never heard of wasabi flavor?
Well, No. I'm going to have to do that.
Oh, girl. Yeah.
So, yes, I can get all these great vegan recipes, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. We need your assistance here at WBAI. Susan. There is a WBAI transmitter fund that you can help. And other people, a couple of folks have been generous. Somebody was like super generous. I was blown away. So thank you so much for your generosity. And if other people can join that person, please continue to do that. Peoples, we need your help, because if you do not call 516-620-3602 or go to give the number 2 WBAI.org, there will be no WBAI. It is really serious. It's very serious. You know, we're not just asking. This isn't general asking for money. We need your help here. So that's 516-620-5602. I've been trying to present Renee Marie in all of her greatness.
No love to give her. That's when she gets you on her wavelength. And she lets the river answer that you've always.
Oh, yeah. 516-620-3602. Or give to, give the number to, WBAI.org. Follow the instructions and be generous. Once again, this is WBAI in New York. My guest is Renee Marie, the ever wonderful Renee Marie, who is, she is so super bad in a very, very good way. So as you are learning, and yeah, for the Sangers, we have more tips for you later. Stay tuned. Oh, and by the way, you can write Suga, S-U-G-A, in my bowl at gmail.com for the playlist. And we're also going to have it available at sugainmybowl.org. I know I've been delinquent. I've been kind of busy in here. So, yeah, WBAI.org. We'll give to the number two, WBAI.org.
And when he knew for certain that only drowning men could see him, he said, all men shall be sailors then, until the sea shall free them. But he himself was broken long before the sky would open. He was so sick, almost human, and he sank beneath your wisdom like a stone. And you want to try, you want to travel blind, so you think, well, maybe you'll trust him, 'cause he's touched your perfect body with his holds the mirror.
Now, that was probably the first time that you sort of invited a Roberta Flack cover. Well, it's actually a... Leonard Cohen. You had heard Roberta Flack.
Let me think. You know, when I was a teenager, I used to play her stuff all the time because she played piano, so it was really easy to figure out what she was playing and just sing it. But you might be right. You might be right, although I've always wanted to do other stuff of hers.
Well, you revisited. You did visit something of hers.
What is it?
Angelito.
Oh, that's right. Angelitos Negros.
Thank you.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Because that's where I first heard it. To me, that version is just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's Ray Brown on the bass.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had all those. I maybe was it her first four? Mm-hmm. But after a while, I didn't like, you know, where she went, kind of more modern. Or it sounded like she started doing stuff other people were telling her to do instead of what she really loved.
Yeah.
Which is hard. It's hard to keep your focus, you know.
Well, we never actually talked about, we talked about your doing vocalese. How do you feel about that style?
I love it. We don't have to have words.
Yeah.
But a lot of singers think they don't have lyrics to sing. They don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And also, while I'm here, I'm doing two vocal workshops, what I call a vocal therapy workshops, because singers have issues. We got issues. And so we need some therapy.
So what happens during this therapy?
Girl, we go deep.
We go deep.
Because the thing about a singer, you know, if you think about it, all other musicians have an instrument in front of them, between them and the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And singers do not.
Right.
It's just them.
Right.
And our music comes out of our body.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this body consciousness. The sound is coming from the flesh and blood.
Mm-hmm.
It's not coming from an instrument you're striking.
Right.
Right. And so all the emotion that can be found in the voice, the potential for it is there in any given song, any song, even as Happy Birthday to You. Think of Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
Singing
right.
that unmistakable right. message behind
right.
that.
Right. right. Exactly.
But singers are, we are really afraid. Mm. We're afraid to be standing in front of the band, out closer to the audience where people can look at us in the eye. A lot of times you'll notice other musicians, they don't look at the audience.
Right. That's true.
Their eyes are closed.
Right.
They're looking down. They're looking up.
They might look at each other. They might.
Right. At each other.
Right.
But very seldom are they looking at the audience.
Mm-hmm.
But a singer... Singer got eyes.
Yeah.
And you can't just stand there with your eyes closed. What I detect is that a lot of singers have a me versus them viewpoint.
Mm.
They call their singing a performance, which to me is the beginning of the problem.
Mm.
Okay, well, here's what I mean. Let's say you're in a room with a stage. All right? Now, the stage is there, and you're standing here on the floor, and you're singing on the floor. And there's nobody in the room, but you're singing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 15 minutes later, there's other people in the room, and you have changed your singing spot to 10 feet away on top of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And now you call that a performance.
Mm.
Why?
Where before you were just singing.
Just sang the song.
Right.
It's not a performance
right.
unless you try. Why do you want to turn it into a performance?
Mm.
Why? You know, to me, it's like making love.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, is your love making a performance?
Mm.
I mean,
right.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't want you don't want to be with somebody who's thinking they have to perform.
Right.
You want somebody who's engaged with you.
Right.
You know, that's what I want.
Right.
And I want to be engaged with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be thinking, well, I got to watch how my face looks and make sure that my foot is just what?
Mm-hmm.
You're not, or that my breathing is, no, you don't, you know, you just sing.
Right.
All that other stuff can just stop you up. It just cramps your style. You never know what your voice can do because you're so focused on having a performance.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, when you go out there on a stage with that viewpoint, you're already, let's see, what's another euphemism? You're already doomed.
Mm. Thank you. So how do people find out about the workshop? I mean, is it already
People who, it's
okay.
already filled.
Okay.
You know, and these workshops are very small. It's always less than 10 people.
Okay.
Because we do go deep. And
I learned through trial and error, the way I conduct the workshop and the things we talk about, people need time to express themselves and get to the marrow of what's going on with them. You can be in a workshop with 35 people and never say a word. And the emphasis is not on singing. I don't really need to hear you sing. I mean, you can sing if you want. When you hear vocal workshop, singers think, oh, we're going to get to sing. But it's not about the singing because I already believe you can sing. I'm not going to critique your voice. Right. I don't want to do that. You're going to get enough of that from other people.
That's right.
We're here to talk about what's blocking you. Let's go there. Now, maybe I might listen and say, you know, give them an example, like ask them, okay, name a song on your repertoire. So suppose it's Come Rain or Come Shine, right? So I say, tell me the lyrics to Come Rain or Come Shine. They go, I'm going to love you like nobody's loved you, come rain or come shine. I can stop right there. In that sentence, which word has the most power? And almost every time, what would you say?
Oh, God, I was afraid you were going to ask me that.
What would you say? Which word has the most emotional punch? I'm going to love you like nobody's loved you, come rain or come shine.
I'm stuck between two different words. It's like instances of come. And the other is shine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the answer differs.
It differs for people, yeah.
And so then I ask them to sing it. And now sing that line for me. And almost 100% of the time, what they tell me
is different.
Is different than the way they're singing it.
Yeah.
And I go, you just told me that such and such a word has the most emotional punch, but I didn't hear. Did y'all hear? I didn't. Now, how can you do that?
Right.
Does that mean you sing it louder? No. No. So what do we do?
Right.
It's a matter of thinking like that. Of stop running all over the lyrics. Look at the song. Listen to yourself. Read the emotion. Read it out loud without any music. And see what the point the lyricist was trying to make. Convey that point to the audience. Those people in the audience have heard this song thousands of times.
Right.
What you got? Their eyes and ears are going to glaze over. They're not listening to you. Is that what you want? You want them to listen. So you have to give that song something that nobody else has given it.
Right.
And it differs from person to person. Otherwise, to me, it's a waste of time and a waste of their money. They've come to hear you. They might as well stay home and listen to Ella sing it or Sarah. I'm telling you.
True. Yeah.
But, you know, the audience needs us. What's the role of an artist? It's not to perform, you know? I don't think so. I think the role of an artist is to reach inside and say, you know what? We the same. I bet sometime in the past week you felt some pain about something. I want to be the person that brings that out and so you can look at it and say, you know what? It's okay. Because I felt some pain this week, too. Let's communicate. To me, that's what we should be doing as musicians, as artists. And if we're not doing it, I pity the fool. I do. I do. I don't have any patience. Because most singers, you know, they think all they got to do is get up on the stage and look cute.
Yes. And behave in a cute way.
I mean, getting back to Eartha Kitt.
Yeah, yeah.
She did that, but she could sing.
Exactly.
Everybody knew Eartha was in the house.
That's right.
She was not just a little bauble up on stage, honey.
No.
She would get right into your draws.
Oh.
I'm serious. She did.
Yeah.
In a very subtle way. Because when you left, you were like, what just happened? Hey, did you ever see her live?
No.
I did. I got the chance to see her live one time.
Excellent.
Oh, my God. She took the waiter. This guy was of European descent. And she says, waiter, bring me a bottle of champagne. So he's like, me? She says, yes, darling, you. So he walks over with the bottle of champagne. Bring a glass, darling. So he's walking up, and she's just watching him. And the music is playing, you know, the music's vamping. And she says, come closer, darling. Now pour. So his hands are shaking, you know. His I go, oh, Lord, everybody's looking at me. This was at the Carlisle. And so he pours it, and he holds out the glass to her. She says, no, darling, not for me. Drink it. And we fell out laughing.
Oh, my God.
She says, how old are you, darling? And he says, 24, something like that. She says, drink it until you feel 65. think I don't now see. That's what I'm talking about.
Excellent. Yes.
That's
definitely
what I'm talking about. That Eartha. And so we owe it to our audience to give them an experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Otherwise, get off the stage.
Well, I definitely appreciate your ethic.
Yeah.
Renee Marie, thank you so
I'm
much.
I'm in trouble for that, I think.
No, I'm glad you said it, because other people need to know.
Yeah. I say that during the workshop.
Yeah.
That singers are my least favorite musicians to listen to. It's the truth.
Wow.
I just, when somebody goes up on stage, I just go, oh, Lord, please let them deliver something.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Thank you, Renee Marie. Actually, there's one more thing I want to ask you.
Okay.
Because I sort of danced around it, but I didn't ask you directly about other vocalists who may have inspired you.
Nina Simone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number one. Well, yeah, I've actually thought about that. Miriam Makeba, when I was at the youngest stage, when I started paying attention to other singers, really paying attention, Miriam Makeba, I had that album where she sang duets with Harry Belafonte.
Yes, yes.
So, and then Roberta Flack, and then Nina Simone. Mm-hmm. I would say those three are the most instrumental. And then much later, Bonnie Raitt, child. Bonnie Raitt, she's sexy too.
Yes, yes indeed.
Strong women.
Well, you can add yourself to the list.
Okay. I don't really feel, I never ever feel strong.
Well, the people who are actually being strong don't say that they are.
I wonder what
other people notice that. They just are. Strong women don't publicize that they are, because they can't be that strong if they have to tell everybody.
Because right. I tell my mom, I say, you're the strongest woman I know.
Mm.
She says, what? Mm. Yeah. She's like, get out of here.
She doesn't even think so. Yeah.
I guess because we know when we're going through something really difficult and how frightened we feel and how many times we waffle before we actually take the step. And maybe we think being strong means not waffling and not being frightened and not.
Mm. Actually making it to take the step, actually being able to make it through the thing that is happening, to be able to make the step. The thing, enduring the thing that makes us strong. Well, thank you so much, Renee Marie, for allowing me to visit you.
In my little flat, my New York flat,
yes.
That we're here for. It's my pleasure, Joyce. It's been fun. I really am glad we went ahead and did this. I wasn't feeling well, but I'm so glad we did. I thank you.
All right, 516-620-3602. Thank you, Renee Marie. Coming up right now is La Nueva Alternativa. Oh, see you next time.
I thought it was my duty to fix whatever was wrong. I was Don Quixote.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.